Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Think of the confidence in bourgeois effects as reflecting an animal's sense of self and sense of place. Both result from the constant internal data processing that occurs in animals as they strive to achieve maximum physical, behavioral, and emotional stability in their environments. Both effects have long been studied by wildlife ethologists. And experience leads me to conclude that these effects may play a significant role in companion animal behavior too. The confidence effect results from the beneficial changes in animal experiences when a strategy works. When this occurs, that causes the animal to repeat the approach. For example, it may take a wild bear who lives in the woods above my house a while to figure out the most energy-efficient path to the river on the opposite side of the road without being seen. Initially, there may be a few unintended human-bear encounters that surprise both of us, but with each success, the bear becomes more proficient and his confidence in his strategy grows. Obviously, a wild animal who has confidence in an approach that doesn't work doesn't last very long. In the world of companion animal behavior, however, things are more complicated. There, both the presence and the absence of the confidence effect may create a lot more problems for animals, and for their people too. Often the most common form of aggression those who do behavioral work see in pet animals is fear-based aggression. These animals lack confidence in their ability to protect their territories. When that's the case, the animal may devote a lot of energy to defensive displays of one sort or another. For example, dogs who lack confidence in their own and their owner's ability to protect the territory often opt for fear-based aggression. And often these dogs preferentially will use a particular kind of aggressive response. Some dogs opt for aggressive barking. Others bark and lunge. Still others raise their hackles and growl. Still others are ankle, calf, or butt biters. Sometimes those who start with one approach may opt for another one if the first one doesn't yield the desired effects. Unless something is done to eliminate the dog's fear, over time, even the most fearful animals may streamline their approach. Odd as it may seem, these dogs apparently gain more confidence in their ability to mount a particular fear-based aggressive response that works. Over time, this response even may become a habit. Simultaneously, some people who share their homes with aggressive animals may suffer from a lack of confidence too. Perhaps they naively believed that all the rescue dogs needed was love, as the shelter or rescue group proclaimed. When the dog snaps when they try to pet her, their confidence takes a significant hit. Meanwhile, others do everything to ensure an all-positive training experience for their puppies, only to see Sparky or Thor start snarking at visitors when the dogs reach maturity. People also may gain confidence in their own problematic responses to their pets' repeated displays of problematic behavior. Moreover, and unlike wild animals who typically get eliminated from the gene pool, owners may accept these problem pet behaviors for years. Some even may redefine their acceptance as evidence of their animal's great love for them. After all, if Luigi didn't love them, he wouldn't waste all that energy trying to protect them. Those who choose to tolerate rather than address their pet's fear-based behavior also may refrain doing so as proof of their own great love for their pets. This orientation further increases their confidence in this choice as the correct one. Needless to say, it's difficult for any kind of meaningful human-animal change to occur when this is the case. Ideally, though, owners instead opt to make and reinforce changes in the physical, mental, and bond environments that enable their fearful animals to succeed. Typically, this includes those folks learning to communicate their ability to protect themselves, their animals, and everything else. As this occurs, the animal's confidence in those people's ability to do this will increase. The more responsibility people assume for their animals' behavioral and emotional well-being, the less falls on the animal. The bourgeois effect doesn't refer to an animal's middle-class roots, but rather to the animal's status as the property owner. Hence, some ethologists' descriptions of the effect as the home team advantage. Studies of wild animals and what seem like a gazillion computerized ones indicate that, regardless how peace-loving a resident and how aggressive an invader, the resident will have the advantage. This occurs because, unlike the invader, the resident knows the lay of the physical, mental, and emotional land. This includes the locations of hiding places, food and water, hazards, and escape routes. Those residents belonging to multi-generational social groups also may share a genetic and epigenetic heritage that enhances their ability to survive in their home territories. The resident also has more to lose than any invader. Establishing and protecting the physical and mental space is the number one priority. Once this occurs, finding food and water, courting, mating, reproducing, raising young, and a host of other activities becomes much easier. This gives the residents even more incentive to hang on to what they have. Granted, any intruder may have a strong desire to acquire those benefits, but the resident already claims them and knows the territory better. In companion animals, if and how the bourgeois effect plays out depends on the animal's confidence level and bond with the owners. Animals who trust their people to protect themselves, their animals, and all their stuff will look to those people for cues regarding who or what constitutes a threat to the space. If those folks remain cool, their animals are more likely to also. If the people aren't calm, then what the animals do will depend on same old, a cost-benefit analysis. Some animals may go into a full-blown protective mode regardless whether their owners agree that the threat deserves such a high-energy response. Some of these animals may target the perceived threat. Others may opt to dissipate their stress by licking, pawing, or nudging their owners. If the person finds the latter behaviors comforting, they may reinforce the stress-driven animal displays and the problematic message it communicates. Meanwhile, those pets unwilling to engage in more energy-intense options may retreat to a safe location instead. A final group of bourgeois pets are those who feel secure in their space and opt to do nothing if their people can't cope. In theory, doing nothing with confidence is the most energy-efficient response. but in the companion animal setting, how humans respond to this may vary considerably. If Ms. D positions her cat as her de facto emotional support animal 24/7, Binky's choice to take a nap or play with his toys while she has a meltdown may upset her a great deal. So even though Binky displays behaviors that might represent la creme de la creme among the companion animal population, it won't win him any points with his owner. The confidence in bourgeois effects and what they tell us about an individual animal's and person's sense of self and place may play out in predictable ways, but only if comprehensive information about the animal's behaviors and bonds with the owner exists. But lacking that information, any human emotion-based spin assigned to the behaviors will take precedence. And when it does, the potential for all kinds of human-animal breakdowns in communication exists.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.